From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
As a new presidential candidate rises to the fore, Florida Democrats seem to be getting behind her.
Massive Democratic enthusiasm, whether it's donations, volunteer signups, or just word of mouth.
A Florida lawmaker insists state school vouchers should not apply to all religious institutions of learning.
When you stand up and say Jews are the brothers of apes and pigs, and the DeSantis administration says, where can we send the check?
We'll also get the latest on the push to give Florida's high school athletes access to lucrative marketing deals, and we'll find out why so many movie and TV productions are avoiding Florida. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. The rules are set for the national nomination process for the Democratic Party's presidential candidate. Tristan Wood reports all signs point to that nominee being Vice President Kamala Harris, which Florida Democrats hope will be a political boon for blue voters in the Sunshine State.
The rules, set on Thursday, require a candidate seeking the party nomination to have 50 Democratic delegates from six states officially pledged to support them via an e-signature by July 30th at 6 p.m. to qualify. Then, delegates have until August 7th to cast their votes for one of the qualified candidates. Florida Democratic Party Chair Nikki Fried says the party's nominee will almost certainly be Harris.
Based on the fact that all of the state delegations, for the most part, have all consolidated very quickly and pledged their support for the vice president, including Florida, we had over 94, and I think at this point it's close to 96% of our delegation, which consists of about 254 votes. One of the fourth largest delegation and certainly the largest swing state delegation. And within a very short period of time, she received the pledges of the delegations across the country.
Fried says the emergence of Harris to lead the ticket has reinvigorated Democrats across Florida, with the party receiving 7,000 volunteers since Biden stepped down and Harris stepped up.
When you have more people on the doors, when you have more people making phone calls, turnout increases exponentially. And that helps, of course, the down ballot from school board races that are on this August primary ballot, as well as getting Daniela Levine-Cava, the mayor of Miami-Dade, up and over the finish line and hopefully the first ballot. And then we go on to November.
Even Republicans have remarked the change in who's likely topping the ticket has helped Democrats. Governor Ron DeSantis said during a press conference Wednesday that Republicans would have preferred Biden stayed in the race because of widespread questions about his health.
I think before he dropped out, I think it was like 85% of the public thought that he was not equipped to serve four more years as president. I mean, I don't see how you can win an election if that's the case.
Democratic political consultant Kevin Cates says Florida was not in play for Democrats with Biden as a candidate. Now he doesn't think anything is out of reach.
I think everybody's thrilled. You see massive Democratic enthusiasm, whether it's donations, volunteer signups, or just word of mouth. And that has a tremendous impact, not only at the top of the ticket, but down ballot where some of these races are decided by a handful of votes.
However, Republicans still have advantages in Florida. They are nearing a 1 million voter lead over Democrats in voter registration in the Sunshine State. Sean Foreman, a political science professor at Barry University, believes the candidate change may help select down ballot races due to higher Democratic enthusiasm in Florida, but doesn't expect Harris to win over enough independents to make the whole state competitive.
It helps to solidify Democrats and give them some hope in down ballot races, but I don't think it gives them the big shot in the arm to change what we're expecting to happen in Florida, and that is for Republicans to win most of the key races.
A poll from The Telegraph has former President Donald Trump up 8 points in Florida, but few polls have yet been conducted between the two candidates, and more recent national polls have the two virtually tied at the national level. I'm Tristan Wood.
A Jewish lawmaker is calling for Governor Ron DeSantis' administration to take action against a Muslim school that receives taxpayer-funded vouchers. As Margie Menzel reports, Republican Representative Randy Fine is incensed by the school leaders' inflammatory remarks against Jewish people and by the state's apparent lack of action since those remarks came to light.
Fadi Kablawi is the imam of a mosque in North Miami. He delivered a sermon in April that raised some concerns. It began in English.
I apologize to the Nazis last week because these people have proven to be worse than the Nazis.
He then shifted to Arabic, making anti-Semitic and disparaging remarks against Jewish people as he prayed. When Fine, who is Jewish, heard about Kablawi's remarks a few weeks later, he wrote to Florida Education Commissioner Manny Diaz. Fine says the Imam's Mosque also owns and operates the Reviver Academy at the same location. The school receives more than $500,000 in state scholarships to help cover the tuition of 74 students. Fine thinks the state ought to be reviewing that relationship, but months later he says he hasn't seen any results. Fine says that lack of action makes it feel as if the DeSantis administration is condoning the imam's remarks.
When you stand up and say Jews are the brothers of apes and pigs, and the DeSantis administration says, where can we send the check? I don't know how else you can interpret that.
But whether the state could take action and what that action might be is unclear. Craig Waters is general counsel to the Florida Center for Government Accountability. He says this situation has many layers in the law.
The whole idea of school vouchers has been going through the courts for decades now. And you know, there are still a lot of unanswered questions about how voucher systems can operate lawfully within the contours of the Constitution.
Waters says the basic public policy question he sees is an apparent lack of transparency and oversight with some of the voucher schools.
Even from Fine's letter, it appears that he doesn't really, or he's not really certain of, you know, how the vouchers are being used in this particular school, you know, whether the voucher money is actually flowing to this particular mosque or to the imam in some way. You know, those are questions that certainly would be relevant to any lawsuits that might eventually come.
So, Waters says, the situation may mean the state is torn between the threat of a lawsuit for religious discrimination and the threat of a lawsuit for failing to exercise sufficient transparency and oversight.
Now, the state may have some reasons why it doesn't want much transparency here, because they're walking a tightrope when it comes to First Amendment issues. And by First Amendment, I mean not merely the rights of free speech and expression, but also the right of religious freedom.
Waters also says the state could be walking a tightrope to avoid micromanaging the voucher schools, because that kind of entanglement could conceivably lead a court to conclude that the voucher schools are being run by the state. Neither the Executive Office of the Governor, the State Department of Education, nor the Reviver Academy immediately responded to questions about the academy's status. Step Up for Students, Florida's education choice funding organization, still lists Reviver Academy as receiving scholarships, but referred questions to DOE. In May, Imam Kablawi told NBC6 South Florida that his intent was not to hurt anyone.
I wasn't calling for violence. I wasn't calling for anybody to harm anybody. I was making a pure prayer against tyrannical criminals who are killing my people.
According to a state house analysis of a bill Fine co-sponsored in the 2024 legislative session, anti-Semitic incidents in Florida have risen dramatically. The analysis cites Anti-Defamation League reports that such incidents rose by more than 100% from 2020 to 2022. I'm Margie Menzel.
A federal judge today permanently blocked restrictions that Governor Ron DeSantis and Republican lawmakers placed on addressing race-related issues in workplace training. part of a controversial 2022 law that DeSantis dubbed the Stop Woke Act. Chief U.S. District Judge Mark Walker issued a two-page order granting a permanent injunction against the workplace training part of the law. The move came after the 11th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals this year upheld a preliminary injunction that Walker issued back in 2022. Walker and the appeals court said the restrictions violated First Amendment rights. Coming up on Capitol Report, Florida used to be a top filming location for TV shows and movies. That doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
You'll see a feature that shoots in a state mostly that has a bigger tax credit, right, or rebate or incentive.
For many students and their parents, the dubious joys of filling out financial disclosure paperwork for student loans is now underway.
It only took us all day, right?
January 8th.
Jesus, and we're still working on it.
And top-tier high school athletes in Florida will now be able to profit from their fame.
Athletes' name, image, and likeness, it's their intellectual property.
Despite better tax breaks and deals for production companies in other states, Florida's film industry is staying focused on attracting big-budget movies and TV shows. WLRN's Wilkeen Brutus reports.
I'm suspended. I'm technically not even a detective anymore. They said I was consistently reckless, inappropriate, and glib.
That's actor Vince Vaughn, starring as a disgraced Miami police detective turned restaurant inspector who falls into a world of corruption.
My gut is telling me that there's somebody who's keeping an eye on me because of what I know, but I really don't know what I know.
Beautiful coastlines, swamps, vibrant neighborhoods, and urban scenes. What's not to like about shooting films in Florida? Well, the cost. That didn't stop Bill Lawrence, who recently produced the new Apple TV Plus series, Bad Monkey, starring Vince Vaughn. Set to air in August, it's a big-budget series based on the 2013 novel of the same name by Florida native Carl Hiaasen. Lawrence says major scenes were shot in Wynwood and parts of Key West without incentives.
Carl is so embedded in Florida and in Florida history. I thought it was really, really important that we actually shot in Florida. You know, the Keys for the Keys and Miami for Miami. Man, Hollywood, you know, is not crushing right now after all the strikes and stuff financially. And they follow the money always. And it is much more reasonable to shoot Atlanta or Louisiana and pretend it's Florida.
Lawrence is best known for shows like Ted Lasso, Scrubs, and Cougar Town, a show set in Florida but shot in Culver City, California. Lawrence, who has close family ties in Central Florida, says he and Hiaasen convinced Apple TV Plus to shoot Bad Monkey in South Florida to be authentic.
Florida has to offer as far as production value and when you shoot on the water and nature and how you can drive 45 minutes in three different directions and get just completely different locations, and the film commissions were so helpful. So we were able to shut down Duval Street, you know, and shot in Key West for a second. So we had a lot of help from good people that obviously want production there. I'm certainly never venturing into politics, but I think that they would have a robust production life if they got on the same financial playing field as the states that surround them.
But for most film production companies, authenticity is not as important as the bottom line. Florida's film industry has been in decline since the state dissolved its last major financial incentive program nearly a decade ago. To save production costs, industry professionals have largely relocated to neighboring states like Georgia, which offers state income tax credits of up to 30% for television and film productions, as long as the company spends a minimum of $500,000 in the state. Now, local film commissions are trying to fill the void and taking it upon themselves to attract film and TV productions to Florida.
It was very difficult finding investors just generally because the state doesn't have much in terms of tax credits, rebates, or incentives.
Independent filmmaker Herschel Faber says it's much harder to attract private financing for lower budget projects. His dramedy, Ethan Bloom, cost $300,000 and it was shot in Coconut Grove. It didn't qualify for Miami's new local film incentive program, which requires at least a minimum spend of $500,000 for a cash rebate of up to 20%.
It would have been probably a little bit easier had the incentive been something that was comparable or competitive with other states like Georgia or New York, even California. They have a lottery system, but their incentive is higher as well.
Meanwhile, Faber says Florida's talent pool of crew members often leave the state for better job opportunities.
It was a struggle, actually, to find local talent, both on the acting side and on the crew side. The jobs that come to Miami are mostly commercials. Gone are the days of TV shows, big TV shows, and features that are shooting exclusively in Miami. What you'll often see is you'll see a feature that shoots in a state mostly that has a bigger tax credit, right, or rebate or incentive. And they'll shoot the bulk of the film there, and then they might come to Florida to shoot exteriors. Let's say a movie set in Miami, they might come for like a week and shoot exteriors on Miami Beach. So that winds up really hurting the state, hurting local filmmakers, because there aren't as many jobs available.
Independent filmmaker Ed St. Jean, known for a 2021 film called Luzi, says nonprofits and local film commissions attempting to fill the financial gaps are typically incentivized to support artists within county boundaries.
For example, one of the largest art support organizations here in South Florida is Ulay Arts, and they support film, they support visual arts, but specifically for Miami. So if you live in Broward, you don't apply for a lot of their funding.
And vice versa, the counties mostly want their constituents to benefit.
It also cuts your opportunities for funding if you're an independent artist that really coexists within the tri-county space.
Florida's legislature had approved a budget of nearly $300 million in film incentives for the years 2010 to 2016, but it was first come, first serve, and the money was gone quickly. Lawmakers ended it after reporting that the program yielded minimal returns on each dollar invested. But the full economic impact of the film and TV industry is hard to quantify, says Sandy Leiterman. She's film commissioner for Broward County and president of Film Florida, a not-for-profit membership organization for the entertainment production industry. She says local film commissions now have to market the state themselves.
You have to kind of up the ante. But we're determined to figure it out so that we can make sure that everybody knows that Florida is always open for business.
Last July, Florida lawmakers discontinued the State Film Commission office, which often pitched and marketed projects. It once had a Los Angeles liaison. Leiterman estimates that the absence of a statewide film incentive program has cost the state more than $2 billion. This includes about 300,000 lost hotel room nights and about 150,000 lost cast and crew jobs for Floridians. She says performance-based film incentives are part of the business model for global Hollywood.
It always comes down to money. It always comes down to incentives. We compete with other countries. England has 40%, tax incentive. The Germany just announced 30%. So we're really in competition with the rest of the world.
Many local film commissions across the state have created their own initiatives. Michelle Hillary is Palm Beach County's film commissioner.
Why can't we, or how can we give some of these production companies more opportunities? And at the same time, use those talents to better market the tourism assets that are right here in the county.
The Palm Beach County Film and Television Commission runs a sponsorship program to benefit local production companies with distribution deals on channels like PBS and Discovery Channel. I'm Wilkin Brutus in Palm Beach County.
As the summer break starts winding down, college students are filling out the FAFSA. That's the federal form that determines how much financial aid students can get. But a new version of the program made it harder to apply, and fewer students are filling out the form. In Florida, submissions are especially low. WUSF's Nancy Guan looks at efforts to close the gap.
In the education building at the University of South Florida, pop music blares from the speakers as students and their families help themselves to fresh-made burgers. They just finished filling out the FAFSA form, so they're hungry. It's one of many events throughout the summer encouraging students to complete the FAFSA. Viviana Gonzalez is here with her dad. They've been trying to finish the online form since January.
The problem was the username and password, that they were not verified.
The FAFSA system wasn't letting her set up her parents' account. Confused, Viviana said she had called the helpline for months.
Every time I tried and called for help, they would hang up on me, and we would be on wait for an hour, and they just never responded.
Viviana says she was getting nervous. The Sumner High School graduate wants to enroll in the Vet Tech program at Hillsborough Community College, then transfer to a university. But first, she needs to know how much financial aid she can get. That's why she came to the event. With a FAFSA expert, they were able to troubleshoot the issue in a few hours.
We can log back into his account and then finish the parent portion.
And that's it?
That's it. It only took us all day, right?
January 8th.
Jesus, and we're still working on this. Okay, we're going to get it.
The event was organized by LEAP Tampa Bay, a college access nonprofit. Jerrica Peets is their program manager. She says typically by this time in the year, students are already done with the FAFSA, but delays related to the new version means more students have fallen behind.
We're trying to catch as many of those students as we can.
Compared to last year, the number of seniors in Florida who completed the FAFSA is down by more than 13,000. That ranks the state near the bottom for FAFSA completion overall, at 48th place.
We're always monitoring and measuring how many students are actually completing their FAFSA.
Jennifer Vine runs the college access group called Planet Sarasota. They've also been stepping up efforts to help students complete the FAFSA this summer. She's worried that fewer students applying for aid means fewer students going to college.
Completing a FAFSA is a very solid indicator that, yes, indeed, a student is making that plan, and that is to go on to a technical school, a community college, or even a four-year university.
And Vine says post-secondary education is becoming more important than ever.
Nearly 72% of all jobs by 2031 are going to require some level of post-secondary education.
Nathaniel Mahadio, who graduated from Sarasota Military Academy, knows this. He has plans to become a lawyer.
I've always wanted to, like, go into law. So, like, legal-wise, you can't really not go to college, so...
He applied to 20 different schools, which he narrowed down to two, the University of Florida and the University of Notre Dame.
It really came down to how much I'd eventually end up having to pay.
But finding that out turned out to be much harder than he thought. First of all, students this year had less time to fill out the FAFSA. The new system rolled out in January compared to October in past years. And when Nathaniel finally thought he was done, some colleges said they didn't receive some of the tax and income information.
They had to ask me for that information again. And on top of that information, they wanted additional information.
And what was supposed to be an hour-long process became...
I'd say a couple days' work in total.
For days, he spent hours calling and emailing college financial aid offices to make sure they had the information they needed so that he could get the money he needed.
So I had to, like, take time out of my day, which I could be using for studying, and say, hello, what do I do? What can I do? What should I do?
He says it was stressful, but in the end, his hard work paid off. In the fall, Nathaniel will be going to the University of Notre Dame, thanks to a combination of need-based aid, scholarships, and work study.
It showed me that, like, okay, I can make this work.
He's just hoping next year, most of the issues with the FAFSA will be resolved, when he has to fill it out again. I'm Nancy Guan in Tampa.
You're listening to Capital Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, high school athletes across Florida can now take part in a money-making venture called NIL. The initials stand for Name, Image, and Likeness. And Adrian Andrews reports it lets athletes sign brand deals and sponsorships.
The Florida Department of Education has okayed the use of NILs for high school athletes in Florida. The decision follows a ruling by the National Collegiate Athletics Association and the Florida Legislature back in 2021 when the two entities granted college athletes the use of NIL deals but barred high schoolers from participating.
I think they should get paid for like their likeness or something.
Keenan Rivers is a high school soccer player from Oklahoma. He believes high school athletes should be paid for their name, image, and likeness, especially the A-list athletes with huge followings on social media. He believes high school NILs provide students with a safety net in case their college and pro dreams do not work out.
The good thing is if they do get hurt, they have money to sit back on.
The State Board of Education unanimously approved the decision, but it took months of discussion from the state's High School Athletic Association to craft a proposal that keeps students safe. Florida's board chair, Ben Gibson, wanted guardrails in place to keep donor groups from soliciting money on behalf of students.
My number one concern on this is the student athlete and the families and being taken advantage of by creative entrepreneurs.
Recently, Craig Damon, the executive director for the FHSAA, met with the education board to go over how he plans to address such behavior. He says high schoolers will be banned from participating in NIL collectives and that students should be finding their own deals with parental or guardian consent.
As staff and our board, we're going to do everything within our power and the options that are available to us to ensure that our student athletes are not exploited by these type of companies that are acting in bad faith.
But some parents are against the idea of their child being introduced to NIL so soon. Carolyn Dickens is a Tallahassee mother. Her children used to play high school sports in the same city with two major universities, Florida State and Florida A&M. In 2023, four FSU football players inked NIL deals with three different car dealerships, Ford, Toyota, and Nissan, giving them the right to use the player's name, image, and likeness for advertising and promotions in exchange for money. Dickens thinks NILs take the attention away from the sport itself.
Not necessarily corruption, but I've seen how the way it has affected college sports. I don't think it should happen as young as high school. I just don't think it's a good thing.
FHSAA's Damon compared high schoolers with NILs to them having a part-time job. He thinks the new NIL expansion might grow the economy by attracting more students and customers to smaller local businesses.
So different than a kid working at Publix or the local Chick-fil-A, having a job, performing a service or a task and getting compensated for that. Student athletes' name, image, and likeness, it's their intellectual property.
High schoolers can start looking for deals at the beginning of the upcoming school year, but must adhere to certain rules. The state is barring student athletes from collaborating with companies that sell guns or drugs or posting NIL-related content to social media that involves or interferes with school property. Other restrictions include the use of NIL deals for recruiting purposes and students transferring schools in season. But there are still questions about how these laws will be enforced. Esther Byrd, a member of the State Education Board, recommended the FHSAA hire a registrar to keep count of which students have an NIL deal and track which companies they do business with.
How you ever know about violations by these, these bad actors. And I am very concerned about the bad actors. I mean, obviously, they've already popped up. We know it's coming.
The FHSAA has agreed to amend its bylaws to ensure student safety. The organization will continue meeting with the Board of Education to hear more recommendations on how to improve the new program. I'm Adrian Andrews.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Wilkeen Brutus and Nancy Guan. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.